Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com.
Welcome to the Paranormal News Insider for the week of November 20th, 2018. And this is episode number 376. And this is your host, Dr. Brian D. Parsons. And yes, we are live on the Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. And this week's news, I don't know what's going on. There's a lot of UFO stuff happening all over the place. And tonight, we're going to be talking a lot of UFO stuff, and we're going to have an update on that Irish UFO sighting that we talked about last week that's been all over the news. And another falling UFO over a football stadium was reported. We'll talk about that. And we'll also catch up on the MUFON sighting statistics. And we'll talk about a UFO memorial that opened for the New York City tugboat abduction incident. You might not have read about that one, but we're going to talk about that tonight. And also, outside of UFO stuff, we've got a haunted doll that has attacked multiple people. I don't know. It's not Halloween, but yeah, it's kind of a crazy story. But there's some other stuff going on. So a lot of this stuff, it's getting hard to really talk about some of these stories, especially some of these UFO stories, because they're obviously fake. They're obviously just put out there. And the problem with what's going on, and I've addressed it here before, is that a lot of these websites, especially UK websites, Daily Mail and The Mirror, the Sun, there's a whole list of these websites, and what they're doing is they're paying people for these stories. So what's happening is people are scouring YouTube and scouring the internet for these stories. YouTube is an easy hit with videos. So people will find people's videos, and if they find a UFO or if it's a questionable story, they'll ask for the rights, they'll take the rights, and then they go and they sell the story to one of these news agencies. And most of the stuff, and we've talked about a lot of this stuff from the sightings of the Goodyear blimp not that long ago and a lot of other stuff, they take these stories. The person who put the video up may actually already know what the problem is, but they just use this for funding, you know. And then these other people on these YouTube channels will create a video for this, and they get more money because they monetize their channels. So it's hard to want to, you know, I want to report. I want to talk about some of these stories that are happening in case you come across them, in case you find them on social media and you wonder what's legit about this. Is this really something that I should be concerned about? And I want to be that source. I want to be that person to give you that information. But some of these stories, I just want to sidestep. Because they're really annoying, and they really serve no purpose outside of, you know, the fun and everything that people get from making money from it. It's kind of disgusting, but you know, we've had hoaxes for years on the paranormal, whether it's cryptozoology, UFOs, or even ghost stuff. So it's just part of what we do, and with unfortunately, so I try to weed some of this stuff out. So you might be upset. Hey, how come you're not talking about the UFOs that people are seeing on these wildfires? Or why are you not talking about how only certain houses are burning because of these wildfires? That's all. This stuff is just speculation. People are making things up. And a lot of these stories I sidestep unless they really become a big deal. Or really, I think if it's something that you guys might want to hear. And this show is really about you guys. I mean, I'm up here doing it. I do a lot of research for it. I talk about the stories that I think might interest you out there, the listener. And getting a lot of listens. I get a lot of people listening to the show. And I really honestly appreciate that, especially those of you that tune in each and every week in here in the chat room to listen live and get all the behind the scenes stuff that I do with some of these links and pictures and things. I got plenty of pictures tonight. So, yeah. Well, anyway, let's get rolling before the show's over. So I mentioned this last week. I put a little bit of time and effort into the paranormal conferences and conventions, mostly the ghost stuff, since more people are into the ghost arena than cryptozoology or UFO stuff. So I spent a little bit of time getting that particular portion of the website up to date. I'm going to be spending a little bit of time pretty soon. I don't have a whole lot of time. Yeah, I know. We have Thanksgiving coming up in a couple of days, and an early happy Thanksgiving to you guys, in case I forget at the end of the show. But I work in retail, so I'm going to be working quite a schedule for the next few days. But hopefully sometime this weekend, which my weekend's not going to equal your weekend for some of you that are off on traditionally Saturday, Sunday, but I'm hoping to get a little bit more of the events caught up, and not too many cryptid stuff happens early in the year. So that's why that, and again, the ghost popularity of these events a little bit more, and there's a lot more going on earlier in the year. And UFO stuff, again, a lot of it's kind of slow to roll out. There's a few that's already been announced. And I hope to get that put to bed by the beginning of September. And obviously, I'll be adding more. And that's where you, the listener, comes in. If you have any information about any conference or convention, you can let me know at insider at paranewsinsider.com. Or you can just go to paranewsinsider.com and I have a little contact thing you can fill out and send me that information directly to me, and I'll work diligently to get that updated on the website, and maybe I'll even talk about it here on the air. I get a lot of people that thank me for that, and a lot of promoters have said that a lot of their people have come through that website. So when people are searching for these events, I'm one of the top sites that pops up. I'm not going to tell you my secret about that, but I do what I can to help these events. Believe me, I put one on earlier this year, so I know what it's all about. It's a lot of work. It takes a lot of effort, a lot of everything into it, and it's not easy to do. So I get it, and you know, it's another process. If you're into this stuff, if you're into the paranormal, get out there and listen to these things. Meet other people. You're going to learn a lot more about these subjects. The History Channel or whatever TV show, Ghost Hunters or whoever you're watching. Actually get out there and meet other people that are into stuff. Trust me, you might have heard some bad things about paranormal conferences and conventions, but believe me, you'll never find a better arena of networking and meeting other people, like-minded people like yourself. And no two conferences or conventions are ever the same. So that's why I really push these things. And the conferences and conventions help mold and shape our culture of what we have with what we do out there in the field. And television shows come and go, but these things have been going on for quite a while. So again, let me know if you don't see your event on there, and I'll get it up there as soon as I can. And granted, events that I'm involved in, which I have a few for next year, I'm kind of being a little cautious. I have a kind of a busy early part of the year next year, but I'm involved in a number of events thus far. So I'll be talking about those as we hit the beginning of the year. And other show news, I'm not sure yet. I know this is crazy. I haven't made up my mind yet. If I'm going to be doing a top 10 paranormal news stories countdown this year. I've done that for the last, 8 years or 7 years or so. But it took a significant amount of time off this year. And I also, on top of that, lost a lot of files. I lost a computer a couple of months ago. And unfortunately, I thought I had all these files backed up last year, but alas, was not able to find the files that contained almost, gosh, I think 300 pages of historical documents for the show, let alone all the month or the week to week shows that I've been writing up show notes for. So it wouldn't take me too long to go through. I do have access, obviously, to Facebook. I could get these links and kind of go into a little countdown. Everybody likes countdowns, right? So I still haven't made up my mind on that, and was just talking to my producer off the air before the show, and we're looking at next month. I've got Christmas is on Tuesday, and New Year's Day is also on Tuesday. So if I'm going to be doing a top 10 paranormal news countdown, it's probably going to have to start pretty soon. I mean, I've only got one more week here in November, and 3 weeks in November, unless I do a Christmas show. I don't know. Maybe I'll do a Christmas special and bring in Santa Claus. I don't know. Probably not. Probably not. I know. But we shall see. And also considering going back, since I haven't done it in a while, going back to doing the Book of the Week. So if any of those things interest you and you think that you want to hear about those two things, a countdown within the next couple of weeks, or bringing back the Book of the Week, let me know. And I'll move forward on one of those or both of those projects as soon as possible. But you came here for the news. I know you did, because the show is called the Paranormal News Insider. And that's what we do. Well, that's what I do. You can listen. You can comment. You can come in the chat room and ask questions. And I'll try to answer them without being distracted by other things. But anyway, we're going to jump into UFO news and go back to last week's big story of the Ireland UFO. Everybody has been talking about this. It's been all over the news. And not just paranormal news, but regular news as well. It's kind of cool when aircraft report seeing something strange. It gets a lot of attention and doesn't get as many jokes as it used to. I'm sure a lot of the news stations that have been playing the X-Files theme song, they always do that for some reason. But anyway, I mentioned this last week. What other information can we have to tie this into something more than just a couple of pilots? And it's pretty interesting that there were at least three pilots that reported this. But the Holy Grail has arrived. That's right. Dash cam footage of the purported UFO over Ireland has surfaced. Yes, it has surfaced, but it's not as exciting as you might think it is. But the footage was shot by Sandy Laverty, and this shows a bright object moving in the sky and then suddenly breaking into pieces. And if you've seen that video, it's obviously a meteor streaking through the sky and breaking up. It's pretty apparent as to what that is. If you've ever seen a meteor actually in person with your own eyes, or you've seen videos, this is exactly what we see. Now, a little terminology here real quick. Meteoroid is when a rock is in space. A meteor, what we see when this rock burns up in our atmosphere, so a little flash of light, and a meteorite is what is left over that ends up on the ground, if at all. And generally, they don't. Most flashes you see, most meteor streaks that you see are caused by very small objects, from usually just like a piece of dust, or maybe as big as a tennis ball. But generally, they're very, very small. Nothing is left. And I memorized this as a kid. I always look at the last few letters and I go, oid or ite. And that's how I remember meteoroid, meteor, and meteorite. Anyway, enough of the lessons. I got to teach every now and again. Something, I want you guys to learn something. If you didn't know that, I hope that taught you something. If you already knew that, well, maybe I'll teach you something else. I don't know. We'll see. So this story became viral very quickly after it was reported that these three pilots had simultaneously reported that they saw UFOs in the sky over southwestern Ireland. While many were quick to realize this was probably a meteor sighting, there was some inconsistency in the reporting by one of the pilots that made this sighting a little bit confusing. We should realize that at this time, the area is affected by three different meteor shower events. Most of that, again, North America, is affected by three different meteor showers that are ongoing. The Orionids, which are active from September 23rd to November 27th. The Northern Taurids, which are active from October 19th through the December 10th timeframe. And the Leonids, which are active from November 5th to November 30th. So there's a whole lot of rocks falling from the sky right now. And if you go outside after the sun goes down, you have a pretty decent chance of seeing a meteor if you stare at the sky for a few minutes. You might have to watch for quite a while. Not really something that I want to do here in Northeast Ohio when the temperatures are below 30 degrees out at night. Although nice clear skies in the cold in the winter are generally a lot clearer for some reason, sometimes than they are during the summertime, but I'm not going to be out there shivering and shaking. And also, while there were no immediate reports put in the various databases of meteor sightings, which I mentioned last week, there was nothing in there. There were five reports collected by the International Meteor Organization, and a trajectory was created from these sightings. So these point of view, the angles from which people reported seeing these things, when you have more than a few, you can kind of create a triangulation. I don't know if that's a word, but you can kind of triangulate where they saw this and then thus create a trajectory for this object. And we also have these pilots as well. And we can take their sightings into consideration and try to match those two things up, which is exactly what some other people have done, and they did a fantastic job of it. And again, there's a little bit of confusion by one of the pilots. I believe, kind of my opinion here, is that this flash that was created with this meteor event probably caused a little bit of misdirection. And so, since most of the other witnesses matched the trajectory, the one that doesn't fit might just be one that was misinterpreted. And it still bothers me that they said that this thing accelerated away from them, but it's probably just perspective. You know, now that we have dash cam footage, and we do definitely know that this was occurring at a time in that exact area from the same trajectory, we would have to assume that this was the explanation for what the people had seen. And go ahead and I'll put that in the chat room. So if you guys are in the chat room, if you're live watching, then you get a sneak peek at these links as I'll try to put them in during the show. Sometimes I forget. I jump ahead and get into the next story too quickly. But nonetheless, I will put them in through Facebook as well as Twitter during the week after the show. So usually beginning on Wednesday, I'll start sharing these links. And generally, I share them in the order in which I talk about them, unless something is a little older and I want to get that information out to you a little sooner. And I'll try to get as many links in each story as I can, because there's multiple links in some of these stories, including the one I just talked about. I did share the basic link in the chat room for this story, but there's also some other information that kind of goes along with some of my research that I would like to share as well with that. But UFO stories continue. And if, you know, it's happened once this year, if it's only happened once, I guess I would be shocked, but it's happened multiple times. I don't know how many weeks I've talked about this, especially lately. I don't know what it is about football games and UFOs, but it's been a tradition. It's been something I've talked about for years on this show, and it's happened again. over the weekend, specifically on Saturday night, yet again, this time in Nashville, Tennessee, where multiple videos and reports of UFOs were turned into a local news station. Now, the videos showed what appeared to be objects slowly falling with streaks of fire coming behind them. My goodness, UFOs crashing. Many thought they were either a plane crashing or a UFO. And it did create a little confusion, a little concern at the same time on social media. Not a huge story. Kind of a, kind of a local story right there. But the streaks in the sky were created by a team called the Black Daggers. Now, the Black Daggers are a U.S. Army Special Operations Command parachute demonstration team. And the parachute team was there to deliver the game ball as well as to fire up the crowd. And apparently it worked. It worked on the team, at least, as they went on to win the game in overtime, 36-29. And that was the Vanderbilt game last Saturday. I don't know if King bet on that one or not. Hopefully I covered the spread. I think it was like 8-point favorite, I think. In all fairness, the YouTube video shot from the stands at Vanderbilt Stadium, you would think that it would be a little bit more understandable because you're there. You're in the stadium. But it did look like a meteor. It was kind of confusing even to me, you know, as somebody, even I knew what it was. But it was still a little weird. So I get it, especially from a distance. It's got to be a little awkward, I guess. And, I get it, I guess. But it didn't take long. You know, people were a little bit confused about what they saw. So, you know, obviously they're going to call their local news station and say, hey, I'm seeing something. I'm not sure what it is. And, of course, that makes great news, and people can talk about that on the air and get that information out there and get people riled up and sell some cars, because that's what you do on the news. You sell cars, you know, commercials. You sell commercial slots, and you're selling local car dealership spots. That's what you do. That's how they make money. Yeah. So I got that link. And I'm going to gently toss that link into the chat room. So again, if you're listening live and you're in the chat room, you get a sneak peek to this information. You don't have to Google anything. You could just click on the link. You can copy it. You can do whatever you want with it. I'm not going to judge you. I'm not here to judge you. But again, I put this out through social media. So if you're interested in this beyond just me mumbling for an hour and you want to actually dig into these stories and you want to read about them, not a whole lot of people like reading about these stories, so I commend you if you do. I do. And I read each and every one of them. And I read multiple links on the same stories. I read about them. I like reading about them. I do put them in social media. So you can follow me on Facebook. Facebook.com/Para News Insider. Search for me. You'll find me. Also on Twitter, @ParaNewsInsider. And the two of those are linked together. So fear not. Fear not. If you're if you like to tweet or you like Facebook, I don't know. Facebook's kind of getting old to me. It kind of feels like MySpace at this point. But yeah. Either way, whatever I... Facebook and Twitter through these two. They're intertwined, intermingling, forever joined at the hip. So if you have your favorite social media outlet, you can find those two there. I stopped doing it on Google Plus because I don't think anybody goes on there anymore. I know I don't anymore. Kind of keep it simple though. So we're just kind of doing those two right now. But if you want me to do something different, just let me know, and I'll figure out a way to get that information out to you guys. But I think it's the easiest method to do. And the same goes with the actual show itself. I try to pump this out in as many different directions as I feasibly can, through Podbean, through iTunes, and dozens of different podcasting sites. So hopefully you're hearing this through your favorite podcasting website or app. I hope. If you're not, again, let me know and I'll figure that out. I'll get it out to you. So we're going to move into the MUFON sighting statistics. And MUFON stands for the Mutual UFO Network. And the Mutual UFO Network is the largest UFO research organization in the United States. And it's all over the world. It's based in multiple countries all over the world. Now, a lot of other countries have their own UFO reporting databases. And other organizations that make these reports as well. But MUFON is the primary one here in the United States, although there is a New Fork and there's a few other smaller ones. There's a lot of websites that try to do the same thing, and they collect information as well from sightings. But it's nice to keep an eye on MUFON because they're the one that collects the majority of these cases. So I kind of try to keep an eye on their sighting statistics that happen. They're put up month to month, and generally I used to get them pretty much on the first day of the following month, but kind of backed out of being a MUFON member. And some of the people that I got that information from, they're also no longer members as well. So it's kind of have a little bit of a lag in getting these things. And there for a while, I wasn't sure if I was still going to talk about the MUFON sighting statistics. The other kind of part of this is it's kind of cool and neat to talk about sighting statistics, and it sounds all sciencey and scientific, but statistics don't always tell you a clear picture of what's going on. And the MUFON sighting statistics is, every time I talk about them, I try to explain it as best as I can, is that these are not reflective of actual UFO events. It's just people that report seeing things that they don't understand. And it also doesn't mean that it happens in the time frame that I'm saying. So there's a lot of kind of fringy things attached to this. It's kind of why I like talking about them. At the same time, I kind of thought, well, I might be backing off on this a little bit, especially when a lot of people were leaving MUFON due to some internal issues that were going on at the time a few months ago. And the other half of this is for me not covering MUFON stats. Is, again, I talked about it earlier, I lost my computer that had all of my MUFON stats backed up, although I do have a lot of the emails saved on different email outlets. I know I'm old school. I used to have hard disks, you know, the old floppy disks to save all my stuff on. Yeah, that's how old I am. But yeah, now we have the cloud and everything, so I can back it up. Not worried anymore. Thought I would learn my lesson the first time this happened a few years ago, but nope. So I've caught back up with the stats. We're a few months behind, and I'm going to quickly cover the last couple of months as well as October, which is the last month that had been reported by the organization. Obviously, we're in the end of November, so November is not done. So we're still in talking about October, but we're going to go all the way back to July. So the last month I talked about was June. So going way back here. So MUFON, for the month of July, they reported 757 worldwide reports, with 497 from the United States. The United Kingdom was the country with the second most reports, with 78, followed by Canada with 62, and then France with 24. 48 other countries turned in reports, with 28 of those only filling in one report each. As far as the United States was concerned, the 497 reports broke down with California with the most at 59, which it should be, because California has the highest population. And having the highest population means you should have the highest number of reports. Florida was next with 34, Washington, which is kind of a surprise, with 29, Texas followed with 27 reports, Oregon and New York both had 23. Pennsylvania turned in 22. Michigan had 21. Ohio turned in 17. Missouri had 15. And Kentucky had 14. And finally, Nevada, Arizona, and New Jersey had 13 each. And beyond that, there's a bunch of other states that had less than 10. For August, so we'll jump to August, MUFON reported 734 total worldwide reports, with 464 in the United States. Canada was second with 64, and the United Kingdom was close behind with 60. Now, in a twist, which this doesn't happen too often, but every now and again it does, a different state led the month. And it's generally this other state, which is Texas. I've seen Florida number one, too, every again. So Texas had the most sightings of U.S. states with 40 sightings. California had 36. Florida had 33. Colorado turned in 23. That's a big surprise there. Pennsylvania had 21. Ohio and New York had 20 each. Illinois had 18. Michigan had 17, as did New Jersey. Missouri turned in 14. Indiana and North Carolina had 13. Oregon and Washington had 12 each. And Nevada turned in 10. And again, a number of states also turned in reports, but they were less than 10. And then looking at September, real quick here, 649 total worldwide sightings, with 450 coming from the United States. Canada, again, was second with 63. The United Kingdom was third with 49. And France was trailing with 16. And let's see, 33 other countries turned in 10 or less reports, with 19 of them only turning in one report each. Of the 450 United States sightings, 44 were reported in California. Again, no big surprise. It's number one in the United States in population. Texas turned in 30, 29 for Florida. Washington turned in 28. New York had 21. Oregon had 20. Pennsylvania had 19. Colorado 17. Michigan 16. Ohio 15. Arizona had 14 reports. Illinois and Massachusetts had 13 each. Indiana had 12. Missouri and Tennessee had 11 each, and Georgia had 10. And now for last month, October, MUFON reported 750 total worldwide sightings, with 515 happening in the United States. The United Kingdom was second with 51. Canada was next with 49. Chile had 26. Australia had 17, and France had 11. 40 other countries turned in less than 10 reports, with 18 only turning in one report. And as far as the United States, California was again the big winner with 83 reports. That's pretty big. And Florida was next with 44. Texas had 34. Arizona turned in 24. Ohio had 23, Pennsylvania had 16, Washington, Michigan, and New York all had 15 each. North Carolina and New Jersey turned in 14 each. Georgia had 13, Missouri, Virginia, and Colorado had 12 each, and Oregon, New Mexico, and Minnesota had 10 each. And obviously, a lot of other states turned in less than 10. But that's really insignificant. And speaking of insignificant, I'm not really going to dip into the per capita anymore. I kind of thought about it, at least not now, because I just did, July, August, September, and October. So 4 months worth of statistics. That would have taken me quite a while to dig into per capita, but it's really insignificant. I kind of feel like it also kind of misrepresents the statistics here that are gathered. Because again, it doesn't represent sightings that necessarily happened in that particular month. Sightings may have happened months prior, even many years prior, and they're just reported in that month. So they get lumped in with those sightings. And that's not just U.S. sightings. That's worldwide stuff as well. MUFON had reportedly been attempting to upgrade its case management system, but it hasn't changed. I don't know how long. It's been pretty much the same thing. So it's kind of hard to break those cases in unless you really go through each one at a time. And that's a lot. I mean, you're talking hundreds of sightings. I mean, even 515. For me to go through 515 individual sightings, I don't get paid for that. I don't get paid that much for the show. I don't get really paid anything, I guess, for the show. But as interesting and as amazing as it would be, I just don't know how worthwhile that really is. When you really break down, and a lot of these sightings that we're talking about in the show, intermittent between these cases being announced as to how many, we're talking about a lot of these cases. So as you can tell, a lot of these cases have logical explanations. And, you know, MUFON doesn't take them out of the case management system just because there's been a logical solution attached to it. It's just, it still stays in there. And they click them. They collect them. So, yeah, it just goes into the numbers. And speaking of numbers, I do have, looking back for the last 3 years, I do have 2015. So to kind of put things in perspective, 2015, they had a total of 10,911 total worldwide sightings. That's a lot. I mean, 10,900 doesn't sound, I guess it doesn't sound like much, but that's a lot because that's 909.25 per month. That's pretty, it's pretty high compared to, you go to 2016, there was only 7,276 cases, and that's worldwide. So that breaks down to only 606.3 per month. And the reason for that is that in June of 2015 was the final month of a television show called Hangar One, The UFO Files. And what Hangar One was basically an hour-long commercial for MUFON. So MUFON's name was out there. The people, some of the people in the upper echelon of MUFON were on television talking about UFOs. And this show was on every week and was reminding people of UFOs. So that's really, in June was the highest, probably one of the highest they've ever had as far as months being reported. They had over 1,400 total worldwide cases reported just in the month of June of 2015. So that was huge. And it fell off ever since then. And again, in 2016, just over 7,200 sightings. And U.S. sightings was 5,358. But interestingly, 2017 had a slight increase. The total worldwide sightings was at 7,686, which is an average of 640.5 per month for the total sightings. And the U.S. sightings went up as well, 5,480. So it went from an average of 446.5 in 2016 to 456.6 per month in 2017. And now we're not all the way done with 2018 yet. And so far we're looking at 6,540 worldwide cases, which is 654 per month. So it would have to drop off pretty significantly for it to fall under the average here. And also the U.S. sightings is at 4,402, which is 440.2. So it's actually a little less here in the United States. So the sightings is a little less for U.S. on average. But again, we have two more months to go. And I don't know. It's kind of hard to say what's affecting this. I think a lot of it, unfortunately, is some of the garbage UFO cases that are popping up on some of these online rag magazines that are really focusing on the cases that have easy explanations, or people are just trying to fake and hoax things. And it's unfortunate because it's kind of almost like misdirection, because there are other cases that are going on that are not getting the airtime. They're not getting the attention that they should. And Deborah said in the chat room, UFO stuff is getting swept under the rug. But some of these things, I think it's a case of misdirection. They're not being talked about. They're being reported, but they're not really being discussed, because these other more disgusting ones out there are kind of getting the focus or attention. As far as MUFON is concerned, I'll just kind of answer a question here in the chat room. Anybody can be a MUFON member. You can be a member, you can sign up, you can just get emails, or you can become a member and pay a yearly subscription and get their journal and get these MUFON sighting statistics, as I do. And you get a lot of other discounts on different things. But if you want to become a UFO investigator through MUFON, they have a very, very, very good MUFON Field Investigators Manual is what it's called. Very, very good. And when I first got this years ago, I started writing books, and my books were on just the basics of ghosts, ghost investigations, and I ended up writing one on cryptozoology. I pretty much swore that I would never do a book on UFOs because I think MUFON had it covered. But the problem of it is their book is over $110. I think it was $120-something. It's even more if you're not a member. And I thought, you know, I don't have to steal from them, but I can kind of give it in my own way. So I ended up writing a book, Handbook for the Amateur UFO Investigator, which kind of covers not everything that they do, but kind of in my way of doing it. Theirs is more like a blog format. It's a bunch of different people giving information. It kind of tells the story, but it's at the same time, it's just kind of a lot of random stuff put together. But it's very informative, and it's very, very scientific and very technical. Unfortunately, I don't think a lot of their cases translate using these methodologies, but and there's a lot of technology. A lot of things are changing with social media, with video technology, Photoshop, and all these CGI things that, again, a six-year-old kid can create a movie and put it on YouTube that would have blown anything that even Disney or George Lucas could have done 5 or 6 years ago. So it's just amazing how this technology is coming. But if you want to become a MUFON field investigator, it's a little bit more involved. You actually have to take a test. You have to get this very expensive field investigator's manual and study it and research it. And I guess the answers are all in there. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I took it. But all the it's a lot of great information. So there's basic different tiers that you can be. You don't have to be, I guess you have to be a member of this. I don't know. It's up to you. Or you can save money and buy my book and voila, I'll make you a UFO investigator. And a little bit more balanced as well. But anyway, let's roll on with this news, and we're going to stay with the UFO theme, and a very serious story here out of New York City. And this all took place way back when, on July 13th, 1977, when an aircraft believed to be a private aircraft crashed into New York Harbor. A lone tugboat went out in search of it, but that tugboat never returned. So in 1977, New York City was on edge because of the Son of Sam murders. And on July 13th, the city was also in the midst of a heat wave, and a heavy thunderstorm invaded the boroughs that evening. And at 8:37 p.m. on that Wednesday night, back on July 13, 1977, a lightning strike hit a power substation and tripped a pair of breakers. And then two other lightning strikes to power transition lines ended up creating a catalyst of events that led to a total system shutdown of the power at 9:36 p.m. Eastern Time. New York City was in near complete darkness. The six-person crew of the tugboat Maria 120 was on a routine patrol when all of the lights went out in New York City. Now, they heard radio transmissions of looting and other crimes being committed, but they kept their patrol going. Suddenly, the crew spotted a bright light that slowly fell into the harbor. The crew radioed the Coast Guard and informed them that they were going to attempt to tow the airplane in from where it landed, near the Statue of Liberty, directly off the shore from Battery Park. Hopefully they would be able to get there and tow it in before it sank, and possibly save the life of at least the pilot of this aircraft, if not more people. So two Coast Guard vessels were quickly sent to help. But when they arrived to help the crew of the Maria 120, they were quickly confused. First of all, there was no sign of a crashed aircraft. So no oil slick, no fire, no parts, nothing. And to top it off, they also discovered that the six-person crew of the Maria 120 had vanished without a trace, leaving only the tugboat remaining with the engine still running. And wow, I mean, that's just scary stuff, right? I got a picture to share about that, if I can find it. Let's see, which one do I want to put in here? Oh gosh, there it is. Scary stuff. So this this event, I mean, this is kind of a big deal, but you know, nobody talks about this. There's a statue. So according to the official website about this event, it says that, quote, in 1982, a monument was erected by the local 333 and the Honorable Mayor Edward Koch in honor of the mysteriously missing crew of the tugboat Maria 120 in Battery Park, overlooking the waters of the last known whereabouts of these six men. Unquote. And another picture of this this monument here shows the plaque, which is kind of scary because it shows a UFO with the Statue of Liberty. And to me, it kind of reminds me of Independence Day a little bit. It's a little scary. So you can read the plaque there on July 13th, 1977, blah, blah, blah. There it is. Scary stuff. And you can visit the memorial yourself if you go to Battery Park, and you will find a man. One of the in this plaque, it's one of the victims, basically. Well, I guess the statue, I should say, of a man. He's kneeling while looking skyward with his hand kind of blocking something out, like a bright light. And at his feet. At his feet lays an alien body just laying there. And people show up and they take pictures of this and they kind of mock what they see. I guess that's what people do. You go to museums, you see statues, people make the, you know, they gesture and people take pictures of them. I don't know why, but everybody, I do that too. I'm not going to say I'm above that. I don't know why people do that. It's kind of weird. So was this really a UFO abduction? Or maybe the boat just sank. Maybe this crew of six jumped in. And none of them survived. Maybe the Coast Guard just couldn't find them. Was it really a UFO abduction? Well, the real answer is that while the Son of Sam murders were real, as was the day and time of the New York City blackout of 1977, the crash and missing crew, and the boat, the tugboat, Maria 120, never happened. It's not real. That's why you've never heard it on the news. You've never read about it on any website or seen it in any book. It's totally fictitious. However, the monument is real. So you may wonder, well, what's the point here? Tourists have been taking selfies and photographs of the statue, and a lot of people that have visited it are very perplexed, especially New Yorkers who have never heard of this story. So the whole story, including the statue, there's also a website, and there's even pamphlets telling of a harbor mystery cruise. It's all an elaborate hoax. It's not real. But all this stuff is real. If you go out there and you look at it, here's the harbor cruise pamphlet. I'll post that in the chat room real quick. You can see that. It's the front of the pamphlet. This is one of my favorites here. The picture of the people posing in front of it. The statue, that's what people do. They're blocking out the light in the sky, and they have one of their friends lay on the ground like the alien. I mean, that's just what you do when you see these kind of things, right? You just kind of pretend. Well, that's us at the thing, right? Anyway. Yeah. So this was a cross between a social experiment, a prank, and an elaborate hoax. So a man named Joseph Reganella, who is actually the artiste behind this, he actually creates statues. He and a crew of six created the story as well as the statue, and it's not actually a real solid statue. It looks like it's real. It looks heavy. It looks whatever, but the statue is actually broken down daily and is carted away on a small cart, and the statue itself, all combined, all put together, only weighs 300 pounds. Now, again, many people are either confused, skeptical. There's a lot of people, Joe, because he hangs out. So he hangs out by this thing. He pretends like he's fishing. He pretends like he's just a person watching. He just looks like a bystander. But he's basically, again, it's a social experiment, partially. So he's kind of listening to what people are doing and how they react. And is amazed that a majority of people, a lot of them just take a picture with it. I mean, a lot of people believe it, whether they believe it or not. Reganella has also created a teaser trailer for a purported movie about the incident, told through the eyes of one of the children of one of the victims, which obviously isn't real. I mean, you can't have a child of a victim of an incident that wasn't real. They also have, and this is really cool. You have to watch this teaser trailer. It's really good the way they did this. The victim also shows displeasure in the commercialization of the incident, showing the harbor crews all the pamphlets and souvenirs. And yeah, you can actually get your own souvenir, a real souvenir, if you go to their official website. Of the official New York City UFO tugboat abduction website at nycufoencounter.com. It's a real website. Now, the fake memorial has been on display since September and will continue to be displayed for the next few weekends as weather permits. Now, if this sounds at all familiar to some of the sharp-eared listeners out there to the show, you might have remembered me talking about this a couple of years ago, a very similar story in the area about the Staten Island ferry disaster, where it was said witnesses saw a giant octopus pull a ferry into the water. Now, this purportedly happened back on November 22nd of 1963, which, of course, was the day of the JFK assassination. So the story goes. So this disaster was overshadowed in the news, very similar to the one that we're talking about now. But, again, it never happened. Very similar the way the setup was as well with this fake statue and everything. The fake memorial and this story, that one happened back in 2016, the ferry disaster. And last year, which I didn't hear about this one, Joe Reganella put up a monument at the Brooklyn Bridge Park honoring the Brooklyn Bridge Elephant Stampede. I didn't cover that one. I didn't hear about that one. This purported event supposedly took place on the evening of October 24th, 1929, which, if you know your history, that was a big day in history. It was the day of the stock market crash. So they always put it on a cleverly dated day, so that's why it was lost to obscurity. But these are, again, it's clever fakes, and I think it's really cool. It's really funny how they're doing this, or how this, you know, he just does it for fun, I guess. And it's kind of social experiments, and it's really interesting just how people believe this stuff without really thought. But he says that some people do, they'll Google it when they're standing there trying to find the information. And that's why he created a fake website to kind of fool people into believing a little bit more. Kind of, I don't know, it's kind of part irresponsible, but it's part funny at the same time to me. I think it's funny. It's harmless, I think, because of the information's out there that you can kind of figure it out that it's really not real. Although the website does not state that at all. So that's your UFO news, which is, 98% of this show. But in the last 2%, I want to talk really briefly about this last story in the ghost news segment. And again, I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Halloween is over. Gosh, it's only been 3 weeks. It seems like it's been a lot longer than that. But it's always a good time for a scary story. So a young woman named Berliz from Peru shared a rather scary story stemming from a Christmas present from her mother, apparently from last year. The gift was a doll with blonde hair. But after a few days, the hair began to fall out. And after that, she put it into a plastic bag facing the wall. I mean, who wouldn't? It's rather ugly. It looks like a balding old man, but it's a young-looking doll. So when she woke up the following day, the doll's head was turned and facing her. Berliz states that the doll that she named Daisy, spelled D-E-I-S-Y, I guess, I don't know, that's how you spell Daisy, can also get up and move around, making it seem as if there are other people in her house. And I got a quick photograph I'll share of Daisy and her very fashionable haircut. I mean, I know a few people that look just like this. Granted, they're men, not women. There's Daisy. I definitely put her in a bag myself. So there was a time where she says she was actually attacked by the doll, in which she describes, quote, "One day a bright light suddenly shone and my Bible fell down from the TV. I started to cry and the light turned off and I saw shadows all around me. I was only 18 and my dad hugged me, and when the light came on, my face was covered with cuts," unquote. So Berliz also claimed that the doll attacked not only her, but her boyfriend, saying it grabbed and beat him while he was sleeping, which ultimately made him leave her. I mean, gosh, who wouldn't? So it says it also attacked her cousin, who attempted to take a nap in her room. And she says the doll has the ability to move objects as well. And if all that doesn't top it off, it's all been validated via a video of the woman talking to the doll. So it's on tape. In the video, the woman is talking to the doll while armed with a K2 EMF detector and what appears to be a ghost box. Now, if you don't know what a ghost box essentially scans AM channels on a radio very quickly, and sometimes you'll hear words blurted out. Granted, this is generally what they call pareidolia. Essentially, you're hearing kind of what you want to hear. Even if it's not full words, you're hearing partial words, and your mind creates the words out of them. Or if you are hearing words, you're kind of general, you're adding meaning to these general words based on your situation. It would be a totally different ballgame if you used it at a kid's birthday party. The K2 EMF detector is held within a few inches of the ghost box, which probably isn't a good idea. As well as it's being filmed fairly close up, probably with a cell phone, which doesn't really make things any better. Purportedly haunted dolls attacking people might sound ridiculous, but it's actually something that's reported from time to time. Last year, Debbie Merrick put her haunted doll up for sale on eBay after receiving scratches from it. A 30-year-old ghost hunter ended up buying it. Why not? And just 2 days after receiving it, the doll apparently scratched his father on the arm. Haunted dolls on eBay, well, that's an ever-growing category. It has become a very competitive market to sell dolls. The auction site actually forbids the selling of these types of questionable items or intangible items, meaning that they must state that there is no guarantee they will get the spirit or ghost when buying the doll. And it's also apparent that it's also, you have to state that it's for entertainment purposes only in the description as well to fulfill eBay's rules. Does anybody really use eBay? I don't know. I don't. Not anymore. It's kind of old to me. Now, there are dolls you would expect to see here, which are old and creepy, but there's also a lot of modern-looking plush toy ones that just don't seem to belong in this thing. So I looked up on eBay, haunted dolls, 1,320 listings. Yikes. And, of course, you can also buy haunted dolls at other locations. Other auction sites, other locations, online sources as well. I've not checked Amazon. I should have checked Amazon. But yeah, haunted dolls in the news in November. Who knew? But anyway, I'm going to wrap it up for this week. Going to wrap it up pre-holiday. And again, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Be safe. Enjoy the turkey. Enjoy the football. Whatever you do. Do it with family. It's always better. Forget this Friendsgiving stuff. No, do it with your family. It's the most important thing you have going on, regardless. I mean, friends are friends. Friends change all the time. Trust me. The friends you have now, you might not be friends with next week or 6 months. But anyway, speaking of next week, I'll see you next week. And before I get into my normal outro, I want to thank everybody in the chat room. Thank King for producing the show and putting everything together. The Paranormal King Radio Network at ParanormalKing.com. So I will see you next week. Well, at least you'll hear me next week. Keep your eyes in the skies, your ears in the woods, the hair standing on the back of your neck, and always keep your mind slightly ajar. And above all else, that's right. Don't stop believing. For the Paranormal News Insider, this is Dr. Brian D. Parsons reporting.